12 o'clock. Along the reaches of the street held in a lunar synthesis, whispering lunar incantations dissolve the floors of memory and all its clear relations, its divisions and precisions. Every street lamp that I pass beats like a fatalistic drum, and through the spaces of the dark midnight shakes the memory as a madman.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Shakes a dead geranium. What Coffin is saying.
Team Coffreys on Twitter have informed us sprint compliqué à Sisteron, Brian Cockard termine 19e.
Oh dear.
It's, I love following their Twitter because it's so
positive,
underwhelming, but at the same time so positive.
Yeah. They always they look to take the positives, don't they?
They really do.
You know, yeah. Brian Cockard claims 19th.
Yeah,
in the sprint, fighting other people off for the coveted 19th spot.
Yeah, and, it was always fun following Guillaume Martin on the Cofidis.
Yeah,
Twitter, the Tour de France.
Yeah,
because it's just a thankless task.
Yeah,
bless them. Mm. I'm just trying to look for other ones.
Sparklingly beautiful again, Paris-Nice today.
It was actually, and there is even snow. On these small, it looks, I actually said, it looks like a painting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, I get like, when I see this, because we're quite close to Gap, aren't we? Sisteron Gap, it's all in the same valley
that kind
of drops out of the Alps. And I get, when I see these rock formations, which are very sedimentary.
Oh, are they?
Don't know. Think so. They're those kind of like plates that get pushed up vertically in the air, and you can see all the limestone sediments, can't you? From, you know, that we're looking at now. You know, it used to be the bottom of the ocean, didn't it? And then now it's sitting up at 45 degrees, towering hundreds of meters up in the air. But when I see that these valleys near Gap and Sisteron, I get kind of slight Tour de France anxiety vibes.
I had that actually at the finish when they do the roll across the finish line and they stop. And they stopped with Olav Kooi, who won today.
Who won today's bike race.
And in the background, there was like an in-the-wall pizza server. And I almost took a picture to send to Pete. That was like, that was full Tour de France vibes.
Have we actually ever resorted to that?
I don't think we have. I think we've just done the kind of the vans, the pizza vans.
Plenty of them. And that's actually always quite a highlight in a funny way, isn't it?
They're like, really exciting.
Because they're always like, you don't plan your day around visiting one of those. So they're always like an emergency option. Or like, I wonder if we can get there's one.
But and then it's kind of like this huge crushing wave of relief hits you because all the tension of making it to the hotel, to the restaurant in time disappears.
So you just go, it's not done. It's fine. It's chill. Done. So that's
just
good.
Sit at the side of the road for 15, 20 minutes waiting for a pizza.
Balancing a pizza box when you eventually get your pizza on the bonnet of the car, which is always at slightly an angle where it's just threatening to fall off, sort of thing.
Tour de France dreams.
But yeah, so Gap and Sisteron give me slight anxiety vibes. But there we go.
I was thinking about that as we were watching today's stage, the Tour de France.
Yeah.
Because that sort of breakaway should have made it to the finish, really. Well, I thought it would. You obviously know a lot more about bike racing. You called that it wouldn't make it to the finish.
Mm.
But that's the sort of thing that Tour de France oddly seems to have more chance. Or maybe it's just third week when the peloton's tired.
I think there might have been a additional factor that we didn't reference in the commentary today that might have had a bearing.
Headwind?
Yes.
Ah, that will have had a big effect.
I think. And I don't think it was a howling headwind, but I think it was a bit headwindy. And so that's going to chip away, isn't it?
That's a big difference. Yeah.
It certainly looked like that, didn't it? They looked like...
It was very strong.
Latour and Campenaerts, particularly when they were working on the front, they were tearing themselves to bits.
Yeah.
And you thought, well, that They're going really hard there, and it did look a bit headwindy.
Mm.
So that might...
Well, yeah, that makes total sense then. I wish I'd known that before I threw my hat in the ring.
Well...
With a prediction.
Yeah, yeah, never mind.
But yeah,
so it was quite an entertaining race, I thought. The breaker was interesting, wasn't it?
There's a bit of suspense.
With Pierre Latour with his idiosyncrasies.
Godu self-flatulating.
Oh, David. Well, they won't hear that because it doesn't make the highlights edit.
I know, it's a shame, isn't it?
But can we just...
So Godu was on the front chasing for Groupama FGJ behind this break that did look very dangerous.
Yeah.
Only had a minute. And Campanaerts and Acorn had done a very much kind of similarly inspired move as their Tour de France move last year.
Yeah.
They bridged across to the group of six from the peloton.
Although that was the Bourg-en-Bresse stage.
It was different.
But slightly different because Campanaerts was already up the road and then he dropped back and waited for the counterattack from Acorn. But totally, those two were suddenly up the road.
Similar vibes. And then the peloton, it was little David Godu who was... David Godu, who was on the front just destroying himself. And I said, it's probably because he's off GC and he wants to go up there and show his worth to the team and it's a case of self-flatulation. And... it was then pointed out to me afterwards, about a good 10 minutes afterwards. Oh, David, you said self-flagellation. I think you mean self-flagellating.
Yeah.
And I was like, that is exactly what I meant.
Yeah. So you had to re-commentate it. But then that whole bit of commentary got just chucked in the bin anyway.
I said, keep it. I think it's good because he looked like he was self-flagellating.
Yeah.
He was going deep.
Yeah.
Deep.
Yeah.
Trying to redeem himself.
At which point I said, I like the word mortification.
As in, it was mortification for me.
No, for David Godu. It was mortification.
It was mortifying seeing him on the front like that, self-flagellating.
Yeah, yeah. Although the word mortification, both in English and French, works on multiple levels, I think. Because if you take it in its purest sort of meaning, which is also has deep religious and Catholic connotations, it means the consumption of one's own flesh.
Oh.
Mortification. Yeah. So it's like, and I think it kind of... And I remember writing about this in one of my books when I was writing the story of Roger Rivière and looking at, who's that famous French TV narrator of the 60s and 70s? Olivier? Jean-Paul Olivier? Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, that does ring a bell. But Tour de France, like cycling.
Yeah,
Jean-Paul Olivier.
Jean-Paul Olivier.
Yeah, yeah.
Narrating a film about... must have been a young Jean-Paul Olivier narrating the obituary to Roger Rivière when he died, and over sort of black and white pictures of Rivière's time trial, using the word la mortification.
Very good.
And in cycling, it has a particularly kind of redolent.
It's very French, isn't it? They use words like a Philippe Brunel article.
Absolutely.
La mortification de David Godu.
La mortification de Godu.
Guillaume Martin
would write a play called La mortification. Yeah, it's like being David Godu.
Un cycliste professionnel.
Who would play David Godu in a film? Who played that guy in Trainspotting? The little guy, Spud.
Spud, that guy would be perfect.
Yeah,
at that age,
that guy.
Yeah,
he could play David Godu.
Spud, that would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
We lied to ourselves and watched Tirreno as well.
Yeah.
We said we weren't going to do that to avoid confusion.
Ben O'Connor confusion.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we watched it anyway. We watched the finish without the commentary. Oh, by the way, Rendalero has been commentating with Hannah Walker, we understand, for the World Feed in Tirreno.
That's rare.
He's been getting on. I think he was intending, I think something went wrong with Brian Smith's travel plans. But but we didn't watch the commentary. But who won that? Oh, Jonathan
Milan.
Milan. Yeah.
Yeah, he crushed it. It looked very hard as well. Pitters was up there.
Yep.
Looking good.
Yep.
Grimai was up there.
Yeah.
But it ended up being Philipson and Milan.
Yeah. And then you said, and I said, God, he's big. And you went, how big?
And you went 204 or something.
I went 203. Because I remembered when you first started on your total obsession about riders heights a few days ago, I remember you looking up. I didn't.
Pro Cycling Stats listed the top 10 riders in the World Tour Peloton.
Yeah, and incidentally,
that was after I'd already started my height fetish, and then that popped up, manifested.
Did it really? You manifested it.
Yeah, manifested it. And the tallest rider in there was Norsgaard.
Yes.
202.
Yes, but here's the thing. You see, I thought you would... So Norsgaard was in the breakaway today. Mathias Norsgaard.
Yeah, which is exciting. Which tallest rider in the peloton.
Quite exciting for David. But I thought... I thought that was just the biggest... He was the tallest rider in Paris-Nice.
Ah.
So I thought, well, Jonathan Milan's got to be bigger.
He looks bigger than Norsgaard, to be fair.
He does, doesn't he?
Looks like a giant.
So that's why I went... So I had it in my mind
Norsgaard
that Norsgaard
does not look 202.
That's why I had it in my mind. I knew that Norsgaard was 202, even though he doesn't look 202. So I went, well, Milan's got to be bigger. Not by much, but he's got to be bigger. So that's why I went, that's exactly why I went 203.
I went 197.
And the answer was?
193.
I was 10 centimetres out, which shocking is a huge margin of error.
He must sit up high. I mean, he's huge, Milan.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just a big unit.
Yeah.
Whereas Norsgaard, he actually didn't look ridiculous in that breakaway.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have said, oh, the tallest rider in the peloton is in this breakaway today.
Yeah.
But if Milan had been in there, I'd have been, yep, he looks like the tallest rider in the peloton.
Yeah, but on the other hand, how accurate are those? I mean, I'm not disrespecting pro cycling stats, but they can only work with the information they've given. It's not like they've gone around with a tape measure and said, Jonathan, can you just come over here?
Actually.
So they're getting the information from what? From the teams, from the press officers?
It's true. Do they kind of just, where do those stats?
I don't know, because the days of the Tour de France medical,
yeah,
where that might have been, they might have been
measured. It's not your license or anything. It's not like
no
weight, height.
Well, have they got your height right?
No, 190.
And you're actually?
191.
So it's work of fiction.
Yeah. Total lies. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder what weight I'm on. I'm going to look at what weight I am on there.
Yeah, the weight thing's crazy, isn't it? Because the weight thing fluctuates like day by day and week by week anyway. But so you do wonder what the value of that is. And also, I don't trust that information particularly.
190, 77 kilos.
And what are you now?
Probably about 79.
Wouldn't it be funny if they carry on adjusting riders' weights till long after retirement?
That would be brilliant, wouldn't it?
Somehow they know.
They should just send it in. Sending it in yourself.
Oh, by the way,
I'm
at 85 kilos.
Now. Yeah, imagine. And I'm shrinking, by the way. Got heavier and smaller. We should do that. Sisteron's very beautiful. What do you know about this place, Ned? Sisteron.
I don't know much about it, David. I'd love to be able to say that I knew a lot. But
it's like
a fine
citadel.
Well, we pass that, don't we, in the road out of Gap every year, that citadel.
Well, I don't normally pay attention.
Either you're driving or you're asleep.
Yeah.
One or the other. Anyway, there's the old Total Energy boys, the Mathieu Bourgaudot.
I thought it was interesting that Luke Plapp, who's leading in the yellow jersey,
was just
sitting at the back of the peloton with like right at the back. Even on race radio it came across that he was sitting the last man in the peloton with 7Ks to go.
Risky.
Very risky.
Yeah.
Not leader behaviour.
Yeah.
Don't know what's going on there.
Yeah. They also did quite a dicey thing with bringing the breakaway back, didn't they, Joel Jaco?
Yeah, Jaco. Look,
mate.
We had to try.
But they did it. In fact, they got it absolutely calibrated it perfectly. Because Durbridge made the difference, actually.
Yeah.
Because Lidl Trek, Groupama FDJ, and Visma Lisa bike, nearly Jumbo Visma, were kind of getting the job done, but it wasn't definitive. And then Durbo the Turbo got involved. And you thought, well, yeah, I get that. But also, don't bring it back before the bonus seconds at the sprint, because... no way will Luke Platt beat.
You had a lot to say about teams' tactics today.
Perhaps too much.
You were very disappointed in Arkea, B&B.
Oh, well, maybe they've just got no faith in Demar.
Which is even worse.
Why?
Well, because you should show faith in order to give them confidence.
They didn't show themselves at all.
Even if your sprinter says, no, I'm not doing it. Well, it's like, yeah, you are. It's your job.
Where did Demar finish today? Sorry to bombard you with all these questions, David, but you've already given us the information straight away at the beginning of the pod that Brian Coquart finished in claimed 19th place in
Demar
the sprint.
14th.
He claimed 14th.
Yeah. So the results: Olav Kooi first, Mads Pedersen second, Ackermann third, Bennett fourth, Van Poppel fifth. That's about right. Tobias Andresen, one of DSM Firmenich.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, he was sprinting because what's his name, Fabio Jakobsen, climbed off today.
Laurence Petit was eighth. He was looking really good on the little climb with 10Ks to go, but I think he burnt all his matches there.
Oh, look, Pierre Latour's got a mullet.
Oh, that's a champion mullet.
Didn't realise that.
Like,
oh, that's quite cool, actually.
It does, actually. Oh, look at you.
Back in the mullet game.
You'd love it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Good lad. I thought he did really well today, actually, Pierre Latour. Thought he
still got the yips though.
Did a good ride. Yeah.
It's descending yips.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah.
Total Energy, so they look like a real Frenchy third division team, their kit. But TotalEnergy is like a huge sponsor.
A massive. And they also, in all this talk about sports washing and Ineos and Bahrain and all these things.
And Shell with British Cycling.
And Shell with British Cycling. They get a pass, don't they?
They do, don't they?
It's really weird, I think. Maybe it's just because it's not immediately a British concern, you know. But TotalEnergy are a massive international petrochemical company who've been sponsoring this team for years. And they barely ever get a mention.
Strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I wanted to talk to you about, I got a message from my friend Jacques Stablinski.
Oh, yeah.
Earlier on today, which I thought was kind of worth just talking about, actually, because it was remarkable and sad. And I could tell, because I got a voice message from Jacques, I could tell that he was...
moved.
Moved is exactly the right word. And he sent me a family picture from the Stablinski family of...
Go to Ned's Twitter now so you can see this
picture. Yeah, go to the... Well, it's not my Twitter. It's the at Never Strays Far Twitter.
Go to at Never Strays Far
Which also
Twitter,
happens to be yours. Essentially my Twitter. But it's this lovely picture of from... right to left, Jean Stablinski, who's standing up, and he's wearing a white, crisp white shirt and a black tie. Next to him is Jeanine Anquetil, who has sort of platinum blonde hair, and she is crouched behind... Jean Stablinski's wife, whose first name I've, off the top of my head, forgotten, even though I met her... because she's 90 years of age now, and I was privileged to meet her just the other week, but just temporarily forgotten her name. And she is holding a newborn Cathy Stablinski, her daughter, obviously. Sitting next to her is a cardigan. He's wearing a tie and a cardigan, and his hair is immaculately coiffed. Jacques Anquetil. And tucked in behind him, a little cheeky 10-year-old, boy who is Jacques Stablinski, who sent me this picture, and he's 10 years of age. And Jacques sent me a message saying that was I aware that on the 3rd of March, so what's that now, 4 days ago, Jeanine Anquetil passed away. She died at her home in Corsica, near Calvi in northern Corsica, at the age of 96 years. And as you can tell from this picture, Jacques grew up around the Anquetil family. So his father, Jean, who, for those of you who don't know, was a world champion in 1962.
A legendary name.
Yeah. And a truly great cyclist of that generation, but rode for most of his career in support of Jacques Anquetil for his team. He was Jacques Anquetil's, well, he called him his general. So they were very close until eventually they fell out, and that's another story for another day. Jacques said, yes, so did you know that Jeanine had passed away? And to some extent I could tell that for Jacques, Jeanine had been a sort of second mother or a mother figure at a formative sort of time in his life. And I hadn't realised that, because it's not the kind of story that...
No.
It slipped through, past my attention. And then I looked into the extraordinary life of the Anquetils.
Oh, it's madness.
Some more. I said straight away, I showed you this picture, and you recognised, obviously, the eyes drawn to Jacques Anquetil, because he's so recognisable at first. But you then looked straight away at Jeanine, and you have a French name.
La Dame Blanche.
La Dame Blanche.
Yeah.
Which was her nickname in the French press.
Yeah.
So for years and years and years, she was, when Anquetil was crushing everything and winning everything, she was his...
Omnipresence in images post-race and around races.
Occasionally at the side of the road with a megaphone.
Yeah.
She would do his travel, book his hotels. Mm. She would arrange his sponsorship contracts.
Platinum Blonde, she by the way, that's the...
Platinum Blonde. What did I say?
No, I'm just saying, because that's the Dame Blanche. She was just like...
The Platinum
black
Blonde.
And, yeah, you can see.
Exactly right. And so she kind of ran... the Anquetil operation, in as much as anyone could run the Anquetil operation, because he was loose.
Loose.
And the way
She was actually 7 years his senior, so she was significantly old. Well, not a little bit older than him, and he stole her from. She was married before, and he met her because she was the wife of his doctor. Oof. And then he just started. He just steamed on in there. Like their courtship was. She gave interviews later on in life saying, he worried me. He was kind of like. Jack Onkatil was a kind of like scary figure. He would just call round unexpectedly when I was in no state to see him and all this kind of thing. And he just like thrust himself into my life sort of thing. And then they actually kind of borderline eloped. And she tells a story about how she found herself on the street just wearing nothing but her nightie and a dressing gown and heading for the hills with Jack Onkatil. Like, and then they were out of there. The fascinating thing about that is, so she was married to this chap, I don't know his name, and she had two children with her first marriage, who by the time that Jacques came on the scene and they got together were of an age. I mean, they were sort of double digits. They were Annie and Alain, and she'd obviously had these kids when she was very young. She then wanted to start a family with Jacques Onkatil. And for whatever reason, the Onkatils weren't able to conceive. Mm. So she never fell pregnant with Jacques. But so determined was she to raise Jacques' child that an arrangement was made within the family. This you know, right?
Mm, yeah. This is...
It's kind of nuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Annie, his stepdaughter, and Janine's daughter turned 18. And became a surrogate mother for Jacques Onkatil. So Annie bore Jacques' child.
Oh God! Yeah, it's dark stuff.
It's quite dark.
Yeah.
Sophie, who was born in 1971, and she was 16 when in 1987 Jacques Onkatil died quite young. Actually, he was 53 when he died. But the other extraordinary, you know, sort of detail about the Onkatil family environment was that his stepson, Alain, so Annie's brother, if you like, and Janine's son from the first marriage, he married Dominique, and Jacques had an affair with Dominique.
Yeah, he was a...
There was a lot going on.
A lot going on.
Complex.
Old Jacques Onkatil.
Yeah.
Bit of a liability, wasn't he?
But Janine's, her life sounds incredible, and she must have been a phenomenal woman, actually. And
yeah.
Just one of those stories that's absolutely startling. And she's, if you see pictures of her, go on and do look at this picture that Jacques Stablinski sent me this morning from his own collection. Mm. That's quite an artifact,
yeah,
actually.
It's cool.
Incredibly beautiful woman as well. Quite the story, really. Quite the story.
Yeah, it's a weird thing because Jacques Onkatil is only really remembered, I suppose, in the Anglo-Saxon world as being 5-time Tour de France winner and this...
And that'll do.
Yeah, and a kind of this aesthetic.
Maitre Jacques.
Kind of cool he looked and all this stuff. But in France, he's got a bit more of a darker reputation for kind of his extracurricular life, if you like.
Yeah.
He was not exactly a role model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even like in terms of his cycling career, his character was revealed quite often, wasn't it, for being the man he was.
Yeah.
A fearsome guy. You wouldn't want to get in his way.
No.
You know, and also kind of ruthlessly avaricious. If you read Paul Fournel's brilliant book, Onkatil Alone, he'll tell the story about that one day race in Italy where Onkatil was, you know, paid to go and win every year. And then they got bored of him winning. So they paid him to stay away, and then they got cold feet. It used to happen after the Tour de France as almost like a post-tour criterium, and then they suddenly realized that they needed the publicity of the Tour de France winner, so they paid him to come again, and he said, well, you've already paid me to stay away, I'm keeping that, but if you want me to come again, you'll have to pay me again.
Yeah.
And then he got to the start line, and then the local hero, the local Italian, said, I've got to win this, Jacques. And he went, well, that'll cost you. So he sold the race in the middle of the race. And then when it came to the finish line, won it anyway and collected the prize money.
Yeah. There you go. Jacques Onkatil.
And those characteristics were borne out when I was talking to Jacques Stablinski about his father's relationship with Jacques Onkatil the other week when I was in France. And he said that, so, you know, Jean's best years as a racer were in the service of Jacques Anquetil at the Tour de France. He got his chances, obviously, like the World Championships, and he was the four-time French national champion in an era of great French riders as well. But towards the end of their time, well, it was the end of their time together, he was racing with Jacques at the Tour of Luxembourg, and both of them at the final stage of the Tour of Luxembourg, Tour de Luxembourg, were in a position where they could win, but he was in the jersey. And like, he was fully expecting Jacques to say, all right, I'll help you over the line here for the GC. And Jacques just started racing him for the win. And then Stablinski, in a fury, beat Anquetil. And so they were like, they just fell out. And that was it. There's the end. And the next year, he started riding for Raymond Poulidor.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah. The other funny thing about the Stablinski family is that they're not the Stablinskis. They're the Stablevskis.
Oh, really?
But as a 16-year-old, Jean Stablinski went to race the peace race. He's Polish, Polish originally, but you know, took a French citizenship and French. But he went to race the peace race as a 16-year-old, and the journalist from L'Equipe wrote his name down wrong in the newspaper, Stablinski rather than Stablevski, and he just went with it. He just, well, fair enough, that'll be me.
Well, look at that.
And so, but Jacques Stablinski, as he calls himself, his son, and he went on to become a professional as well, racing for Cofidis. He is known as Stablinski, but in his passport and his birth certificate, Stablevski.
Wow.
That's quite interesting.
That's a lot of good facts there, Ned.
Well, it's just, it's one of them stories, isn't it? Yeah.
Was he the first to win five tours?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, wasn't he?
Yeah, it goes Anquetil, Merckx, Indurain, Armstrong, Indurain, Armstrong.
So that's
almost Froome.
If only he hadn't blown his nose on that TT bike at the Dauphiné.
Yeah. Or if only Geraint Thomas hadn't been better than him in 2018. Where did he finish? Did he finish third? Yeah, he finished third. Didn't he? Who was second that year?
But he had won the Tour de France before to the Giro.
Yeah, but it wasn't enough.
Wasn't enough.
Who finished second that year? Was it Dumoulin? Yeah, it was Dumoulin.
I
wonder what he's doing
as well.
Yeah. Hey, we had a meeting today. Some Tour de France planning.
Was I involved?
Well, you were talked about occasionally.
I wasn't there then.
No, you weren't there.
Okay, good. I just didn't know whether I was involved, whether I was there and just not listening or not.
No, it was a full-on meeting.
Oh,
very. The production team, producers, Gary. Well,
that's why you went to the room when I arrived.
Yeah. We're in the boardroom.
Brit, there's a boardroom?
Yeah, I didn't realise that. Like, next door.
Look at that.
That's not, I say
what did you talk about?
Tour de France.
And what should I know?
a lot of my focus.
What have you thrown me under the bus for?
I think it wasn't so much me, but Gary.
What's he throwing me under the bus for?
Well, I probably can't say because it's embargoed, but he did have He was quite keen that you like maybe produced a strand of little mini features about a certain subject matter.
Wow.
Yeah, non-controversial subject matter. Don't
Gary
worry.
Gary wants me to do something.
Yeah, he said, well, you'd be the right man for the job.
Well, that's a great privilege.
And a burden.
And a burden. That is a bit of a burden. Damn it.
You'll have to actually do it.
I know. Oh.
No, we were talking about the team and you know, and kind of how to improve it and take it from, you know, to little extra bits and pieces.
Do they have any concept drawings for our new truck and commentary position and green room?
No.
Oh, what?
No. There was some discussion about hotels that my ears perked up there.
Yeah,
because I'm still insistent that I hate driving in the evenings.
Yeah, me too. So I made that clear yesterday.
Yeah. Don't know if the message has totally got through. There's probably stuff I just can't say really, but it was quite fun to it was quite fun to think ahead. Actually, do you know what was good? Was look at the race route in detail.
Oh yeah.
Because I only up until this point, you know what it's like race by race.
Yeah.
And the Tour de France is so long, it's 21 stages. I don't know if you know that.
It's 3 weeks now.
3 weeks. And so it's quite hard to absorb it all in sort of detail. I think this is okay to say. I don't think our producers have a problem with this, but under the terms of the rights deal that ITV have, which is
a certain amount of hours,
so we show almost 90% of the race, but there are a certain number of hours, don't know what it is off the top of my head, that we that we can't show. Right. So we have to decide which days do we come in a little bit late. That's why we don't always show all of every stage. And that's so. But these have to be decided quite a long time in advance. You can't just make it up the day before, because ITV4 have to...
You can't see what's going to be crossfire today. Let's watch all of it.
They have to publish their schedules weeks and months, if not months in advance, so it sits in the Radio Times and all that sort of thing. And, you know,
Radio Times.
The Radio... Well, there are people who still... TV Times, Radio Times.
Yeah.
We used to have the Radio Times in my house, but not the TV Times.
Was it TV Times, like a kind of Channel 4 vibes?
No, not even. It was predating Channel 4 when I was a kid. Yeah, yeah, that far back. But you're right. You're in the right ballpark.
Yeah.
TV Times is just a little bit grubby.
Yeah, a little bit tabloidy.
Yeah. Because it was basically ITV's TV, like Radio Times, wasn't it? So it's a bit more commercial. And I think I've mentioned this before, we don't really watch ITV in my house.
Ned! You don't... Ned!
It was a little bit... Oh, it's on ITV. Also, partly because we couldn't get the signal for it. Like, there'd be Dad in the corner of the room with an aerial standing up like that. But actually, it's BBC Two we couldn't get ever. Play Away. I could never watch Play Away because it was on BBC Two.
Just pretty much. BBC One.
One channel. And the telly where you had to go stand up and press the button and then go back and walk down. But it was, I tell you, like, we did occasionally watch ITV, but there'd have to be a compelling reason to watch it. Anyway, going back to the meeting. So we had to try and figure out which, in advance, which stages you could risk saying, well, probably we can come in late here.
You clear it up.
Yeah, I was... The one that they'd originally said, quite like to know your opinion on this. There was one stage where they'd originally sort of kind of thought that they might come in a bit late, and I said,
and that's a hill at the beginning or something.
There's not so much a hill at the beginning. There are hills towards the end, but it's the first stage in the Massif Central. It's stage 11.
Oh, that's going to be game on,
isn't it? So I think it's like, you know, because I think
what date.
About the 11th, actually. I think we're almost in time with because it starts on the 1st of July or something like that. So, but if you think about the first block of racing through to the first rest day, it's either kind of, well, sort of the first weekend takes care of itself, but then you've got either sprint or sort of GC day. Mm-hmm. Sprint. So there's not a day where a breakaway is going to go to the line, I don't think, necessarily in that first
not a
block
long
of
break.
Racing. Not a long break.
Yeah.
And then there's off the back of the rest day. So you've got the gravel stage before the rest day, which is going to be brilliant, I think, in Troyes.
That's going to be fabulous.
I think it's going to be really good. Mm-hmm. Then you've got a sprint. Mm-hmm. And then you've got this stage 11, which is kind of rolling. And then Massif Central hills towards the end.
Yeah.
And so I think that's the first day you get a 25 rider move going up the roads, potentially, and a big old scrap. So
like an
I might be wrong.
Of battling
I've kind of like a curse of death now. It'll probably be an absolute stinker.
I think you're right there, but
I put my hand in the air and said, maybe we do all the stage on that day.
Yeah.
And the other one we had a slight discussion about that we weren't sure yet which way it's going to go is the individual time trial on stage 21.
In Tunis.
Now, normally, if it's the Champs-Élysées stage, I would be a total advocate of saying, come in with one lap to go on the Champs-Élysées.
Yeah.
But actually, I think there's an argument to be made for saying... I think it's historic.
Yeah.
You know, it's never been done before that the Tour de France has finished outside of Paris. And weirdly, because you see every rider off the start ramp and every rider on the road, by the time you finish 3 weeks of racing, every rider has had their story and their little...
Yeah, that's so true. It's like a wrap-up.
It's a little... do you remember him? He was in the breakaway on stage 13, you know?
That's very good. Although, to be fair, by that point, we're on Groundhog Day and can't remember anything.
That's true. But then you can take notes. I can take notes.
We can use a computer.
Or take notes.
No, but I think you're right, because there are like just lots of little anecdotes.
Yeah.
I do think that's a good idea.
I think it's almost a chapeau thing as well. Mm-hmm. A kind of like doff the cap. You've done it. So
we're unlikely to have any TT specialists kind of who aren't on GC there either, because they'll have ditched out for the Olympics. So it's going to be just the final guy who's going for the TT.
That's true. That's true. Do you think Tarling will go to the Tour de France?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Do you think he might?
No, Olympics.
Do you think Ganna will go to the Tour de France?
No, Olympics. That's my just initial thinking.
Well, they won't even start. Ganna will have to go to the TT. He's Italian.
Oh, God. God, yeah, you will. Florence. Hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. 40-minute neutralized rollout in Florence. That got discussed.
Oh, what? Oh, are we going to do the handover to Gary?
Well, there's a lot of... quite a heavy discussion point in the podcast. Who's going to talk over that? And I think I've won that battle.
Well done.
Yeah.
Mate, so we're racing commentators.
Absolutely.
We need to save our for when the flag drops. That's what we can
imagine. Can you imagine if you had to do all of the 40 minutes of the neutralized rollout in Florence? Imagine the list of dates you'd have to write down in your notebook.
Yeah, that's epic.
Oh.
Epic.
And all the references
what
to the Medici family. Yeah.
Is get like a...
An Italian.
Yeah. It's like guide. Just going... Oh, podcast equipment hit a sec. That would be, imagine just hiring like a Florence guide. Just some like go on the internet, go on TripAdvisor, find a Florence guide.
Yeah.
Just hire them on their normal rate.
Yeah.
Get them on there.
Yeah.
With Gazza to talk us through Florence.
Well, that would be very cool. Sorry, I've got a bit of issue with my headphones. Just drop the recorder. It's still recording. That's good. Yeah, no, that would be good.
I think that would be really good.
Yeah.
I'd love that. I think everyone would love that.
Yeah.
Like being guided through Florence by a guide.
Yeah, from the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Very good. Yeah. Mm. All right. So, how did your ride out go this
week? It went really good. I met at Regent's Park at 7 a.m.
That's super early, isn't it?
It's what
was
they
everyone
do.
Sort of on their way to work then? Did they?
I don't know. It's mixed. A lot of people go there like 6 o'clock to go riding at Regent's Park when it's quiet. I made a bit of a mistake because I looked and I was like 17 kilometers from Wimbledon. That's going to take like half an hour. I was going on Girona kind of timings.
Wait.
Forgot traffic
lights. You're staying in Wimbledon?
Yeah.
And you had to be in Regent's Park?
Yeah.
And you left half an hour?
Just about.
You're on the road bike though, not
on the
on the
road bike.
Hmm. How much did you miss your time?
5 minutes. I was late.
Yeah, 5 minutes late.
Yeah.
Yeah. Red lights make a difference.
I was having to go pretty hard by the end. Like 174 heart rate going there. And it was really good. There were like 30 plus people, and it was lovely. This is my sporting club vibe again. Actually, I'll put in the show notes for people to sign up. And it's still in its kind of prototype, experimental phase. Yeah. Kind of just doing these sort of things.
Yeah.
And it was lovely. Group of 30 people, did a few laps, went to Via Atelier for coffee afterwards.
Excellent.
Yeah, just a really nice little hangout.
Did anybody who did the Primrose Hill run turn out and do the ride?
No.
Different crowd.
Different crowd. It was fascinating.
Well, quite interesting.
Well, I guess it's quite interesting. Well, it is fascinating.
Yeah, fascinating for you, yeah.
Yeah. I think so. I could be wrong. Sorry if you were both.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was like nice. Bit mixed some people on Bromptons, some bit most on road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any little sprints for signs?
No, there wasn't. It was a very social pace.
Right.
It was lovely.
Okay.
Just, but yeah, no, so that was good. I enjoyed that. And then I rode back home again. Yeah. Jumped on Zwift because I'm a maniac.
Yeah.
And then came in here and yeah, I'm feeling a lot. I was tired yesterday. I feel good today.
Yeah, you said you just like, you got back to your sister's place. You're staying.
I just sat on the sofa and watched TV, which I never do.
Yeah.
I was like, couldn't move.
Yeah.
Frazzled.
Yeah.
Happens to the best of us, I guess.
It does. It does. Mm. Oh, by the way, I'm just mentioning it now. Oh, you've got a thing to mention that I said, I bet you forget.
Have I just done it?
Oh, is that what you were going to mention?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sporting so club. Go to show notes. Sign up to find out more.
Oh, we've had some more suggestions about merch.
Have we?
Some quite good ones, actually. Yeah, quite a lot. After our call to arms yesterday. So I'll mention that now. I just wanted to say, just because somebody might be interested, that the T.S. Eliot at the beginning of today's podcast was from, again, not from The Wasteland. That was from Rhapsody on a Windy Night by T.S. Eliot, which is an amazing bit of writing. Right, okay, here we go. Let me scroll through. Julia Weller says, hoodies, please. Okay.
Okay.
Steve Harrington says, T-shirt idea, Never Strays Far Dream Analysis Company. Yeah.
Not bad.
Hey, where should... Time, Manor, Place says, hey, where should At Never Strays Far be twinned with? Margate.
Do you think Margate?
Yeah. Or do we have to twin ourselves with another podcast?
I'd say probably another podcast.
Oh, should we...
Or another...
Let's go for a hitter, like a really big one, like Joe Rogan. No.
Yeah, Joe Rogan. It's not really.
No.
Oh, he strays quite far, old Joe Rogan.
Yeah, well, but I think the whole point about bad twinning is it's like Margate and Les Mureaux. So I think the
rest is politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that Alistair Campbell's one?
Yeah.
Never Stray Far is twinned with The Rest is Politics.
Yes.
As of now, we've just declared that something, something, something. Right, okay, and... hang on. Ben O'Connor. This may reflect an element of recency bias, but Ben O'Connor is not having a great Paris-Nice is quite good. There you go.
Yeah. Where's Ben O'Connor?
Oh, here's a good one. Stephen Kingdom. This is for merch. And a potential, I like that, you'll like this, a potential slogan for merch. Choose style over speed.
Yes.
Now, you like that. That's a good one from Stephen Kingdom. Gray says, I'd like to see peeling an orange inserted into famous cycling quotes. It never gets easier, you just peel oranges. As long as I breathe, I peel oranges. And tomorrow we ride, today we peel oranges. That's very good, Gray. That's very good. Keith Mack, this is the merch question, says, do you have a list of the races that you're commentating on for ITV in 2024 and any other broadcasters for that matter? Thanks. Well, actually, it's dead simple for ITV. We do...
the Dauphiné and Tour de France and Tour of Britain, maybe.
If it happens. And if we're...
You know, the choose style could be a good one. Because you know there's the kind of iconic choose life, and they've done choose love.
Yes.
We could do choose style on the front and just put over speed on the back.
I like it. So that's t-shirty, isn't it? Okay. This is quite good as well. Jules says, why choose? Word cloud of all the phrases printed on buff bucket hat t-shirt musette. A word cloud.
Word cloud.
Kind of an interesting one. Yeah. I hadn't thought of that. We're going to try. Here we go. Ross Watson says, what about a Never Strays Far Ass Saver Mudguard?
Yeah.
Passport holder? Or a notebook called Pete's Theosaurus?
It's Pete's words.
That'd be a bit like the Orange Football. I think we could guarantee to sell two or three of those. The Plank, Darren Mead says. The Plank, Clara.
Plank.
Yeah, Clara. The Plank's quite good. As a design element, Pete's melancholy sunflowers as they were all dying. I'd forgotten about Pete and his sunflower.
Pete's sunflowers. Just a sunflower.
Yeah. And then finally, Matt says, I would love to see a Never Strays Far information pad phone cover.
That's good.
You've excelled yourselves, Twitter arty people.
You could just have like a picture of a sunflower and then just melancholy.
Yeah.
That would be really nice.
Yeah.
You know, just a lovely picture of a sunflower on a t-shirt, which is very kind of like beautiful, but then it's just melancholy.
See, here's the other thing. We could just do like a range. Instead of like having three options, we should build a website where there's 150 different options. Like,
and literally just, after every podcast, just new one goes up.
Just new one goes up.
Mm. That would be, I mean, yeah, why not?
Yeah. All right. So a bit more Elliot tomorrow. And what's tomorrow's stage like?
Stage six. I have no idea.
Me neither. We'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah.
This Mother's Day, treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their advanced eye care duo brightens and firms skin around your eyes, while the Golden Glow Body Trio nourishes and smooths skin all over. Go to OSEAMalibu.com and use code MOM for 10% off your first order site-wide.